Welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast.
Today we welcome Amber Magnolia Hill, who is a mother, herbalist, and writer. In this conversation, we get in-depth about her experiences with death, grief, and new life. We talk about the gifts of clarity that death brings and how to approach death in non-fearful ways. Amber shares how studying your ancestry can connect you with your own unique spiritual sustenance. And finally, we talk about using psychedelics in a sacred way as medicine, not as party drugs, to open our hearts and minds to different ways of being in the world.
We're your hosts, sisters Natalie
and Lizzie Ross.
Dream Freedom Beauty is a podcast for free spirits who yearn to connect deeply with their intuition and manifest their dream lives in harmony with the earth.
You can find the podcast show notes at dreamfreedombeauty.com.
Well, welcome, Amber.
Hi.
Thanks so much for coming on the show today. And we're really excited to hear more about your story and to get a little deeper into some of the experiences you've been going through in these past 6 months or so.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm happy to be talking with you.
Cool. Well, in the last 6 months of your life, you've had an absolutely incredible journey filled with loss and grief and heartache and new life. Your mother died in a car crash at the end of last year, and now you're expecting a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine the mix of feelings you've been through. And you've beautifully shared some of your experiences of grieving and sadness and joy on your blog and through your social media accounts, which I just have to give you a big thank you for, because that brings so much truth and reality to these sometimes glossy internet lives we live. And I know there's no way of fully communicating this, the depth of this, but can you do your best to describe your journey of experiencing both the loss of your mother and the gift of a new baby in such a short time?
Yeah, it just hit the 5 month mark, so it's really hard to believe that it actually hasn't even been half a year yet, and so much has changed and shifted, and it still feels weird to have people like say to me, "Your mom died," you know, to be reminded of it. Like, I know it in my heart all the time, but sometimes hearing it externally, I'm like, "What? Oh, yeah. That happened." And it's interesting because right now I'm speaking to you from a friend's house because I have pretty bad Wi-Fi out at my little country cottage. And I'm sitting on her bed in the exact same place I was sitting when I found out that my mom had died. Wow. So yeah, I'm feeling a lot of big feelings right now, as I usually do when I start talking about these things. Yeah. So the day after Thanksgiving on November 27th, last year, 2015, my mom was driving home from work and was killed in a car accident. And I found out about it the next morning, early in the morning. And it's, you know, you mentioned how I've been pretty honest about the whole thing on social media. And I really wanted, that was a very conscious move on my part, because I've noticed watching other people's grief experiences online that I just always felt like, maybe not always, but so often, that there was something missing. I'm like, but what's the reality? What's the grit and the dirt of it? You know, I think we're all kind of fascinated by what grief is really like if we haven't been through it, what it's really like to lose someone, especially unexpectedly. Like, that's everyone's worst nightmare, right? It was my worst nightmare from when I was a young child to have my mom die in a car accident driving home from work. I had thought about it so many times in my life. So it was really interesting in the initial moment that I heard the voicemail from her husband when he said she didn't make it. Mm. Instead of there being this like outrage or like, no, there was like a, oh, it finally happened. Okay, now how do I deal with the fact that it finally happened? And it gave me a sort of calm center from which to act for the first few hours while I had to make a bunch of phone calls and figure everything out. And then I could sort of let the devastation kick in a little bit later, 10 minutes later, I guess, is when I started sobbing for the first time. But I mean, it was so interesting because there's been this little aspect of maybe not inevitability about it, but because I had thought about it so many times happening, just like it did with her driving home from work. And she only had 6 more weeks of work left when this happened. She was about to retire. So I had stopped worrying about it, you know. I thought we were in the clear. My childhood nightmare was never going to come true. It's so hard to put it into words. She was my best friend and my sister's best friend and all of her friends' best friend. We talked about that at her memorial service, that everyone thought she was their best friend, and she was. She was just such a wonderful, loving, kind, beautiful person. And, you know, we texted every day. We talked on the phone multiple times a week. And so to lose kind of your daily check-in person, it's big, especially because I have a daughter. I have a 9-year-old daughter, and they were really close. And, you know, my mom was the one that I could always tell all the little things that happen, the little things that other people are going to be like, yeah, your kid's not that great, but your mom's going to be like, oh my God, she's the greatest. So I miss that. Alongside just the grief and the devastation and those moments where it just like takes over me that she's gone and that this horrible thing happened and that she died the way she did. And there's also just this expansive love that she showed to me and my sister and everyone else in her life for her 64 years on the planet. And I feel that love as strongly as I ever did, if not more strongly, now that she's gone. Wow. And that's really been able to keep me going, you know, to keep me going. When I was talking to a friend this morning and she said, you know, I don't want to get too woo-woo or anything, but I feel like when a loving, wonderful person dies, their love expands more in the death state than it was able to when they were embodied. And I really understood what she was saying in relation to my experience with my mom. I'm pregnant. I'm 21 weeks pregnant now. I got pregnant about 3 weeks after my mom passed. And it was interesting because she loved being a grandma. My daughter is her only grandchild, and there was just nothing she loved more than being a grandma, and there was nothing she wanted more than to have another grandchild. And I've known that for a while, and over the years I've thought, maybe I will, maybe I won't. You know, I'm not with my daughter's father anymore, but I have been with a wonderful man for 3 years now. And we've kind of, me and him have always been like, well, maybe we won't have kids. You know, we've got my girl, and let's just focus on ourselves and like have money and time and energy, and all those things that people with kids don't always have. And then 2 weeks before my mom died, it was the new moon, I remember, in early November. He and I spent the day together, and somehow it was random. Neither of us had this agenda, but by the end of the day, we'd kind of had this series of conversations where we were like, you'd have a baby? Well, yeah. You'd have a baby? Well, yeah, maybe we should have a baby. And we started talking about what we would need to do to have a baby, like, you know, what we needed to put into place in our lives to build a foundation. And I didn't know if I should tell my mom or not that we were seriously having this talk, because I knew she'd get so excited, you know, and then would be disappointed if it didn't happen. But like I said, she was my best friend, and I told her everything, and I just finally couldn't wait to tell her. So I called her. I remember pulling over on the side of the road and calling her, and I told her, you know, Owen and I are really seriously considering this, and it feels like something my heart really wants and that I'm ready for. And after she retired, her and her husband were going to move up here to be closer to us. And having her here would have just made, you know, the whole postpartum experience and having another child so much more joyful and easier. And she was just thrilled over the moon at the idea that she might have another grandchild in her future. And I love so much that she was carrying that news with her for the last 2 weeks of her life. And her coworkers and friends were like, your mom was glowing, you know, and the last time I saw her, she was just glowing. And I know that was why, that and her imminent retirement after 40 years of dealing roulette at Harrah's Lake Tahoe. Mm. So, you know, when she died, I was like, I don't know if I can do that anymore. Like, her being here and her being close and being a support person was one of the big reasons I thought that I could have another child at this time in my life. And just wanting to share the joy with her was such a big part of it. And my partner, Owen, was like, okay, I totally understand. Let's just take some time and and maybe some years, you know, while you go through the grief process and we decide what's going to happen. And I agreed. And my first ovulation after she passed, I got pregnant through a condom. So, you know, obviously, it just feels so connected to her. So just feels like one in the same thing, her passing and this baby coming through. And so, and it really has helped, not just for me, but for the whole family. My sister, my grandma, my mom's mom turned 94 right after my mom died. They were super close. They talked on the phone every single day at the same time. And my mom's husband and brothers and just everyone in the family, it really helps that this baby is coming through. And then it feels like a parting gift from my mom.
Wow. So after your mom's death, you said that you used protection and you got pregnant anyways. And you feel like it's connected to your mother. Has that come through in any, you know, beyond just this sort of sense of that, has it come through in dreams or in other ways of knowing or experiences that you've had?
Well, the biggest one is we were sure it was a boy. I was so sure it was a boy. And my sister was too, and most of the closest people in our lives. And then we had an ultrasound 2 weeks ago because I wanted to know for sure. I didn't have an ultrasound with my last pregnancy 10 years ago and wanted that experience this time. And so I was so sure it was a boy, right? And it took the ultrasound technician about 40 minutes to find the genitals and be able to tell us. But as soon as the baby's image showed up on the screen at the beginning of the appointment, I was like, oh my God, it's a girl.
Oh wow, you just knew.
Yeah, just seeing that external image, something about like that relationship shifted. And then sure enough, at the end of the appointment, she was like, oh, it's a girl. And I started sobbing so hard. The ultrasound image was bouncing on the screen. My daughter was like, Mom, are you okay? But my mom had two daughters and she loved having two daughters. And I always said that I wanted two daughters too. So that moment made me feel even, it just kind of deepened the connection that I feel between this baby and my mom.
Oh, wow. That does feel special to carry on that lineage of sorts of mother to two more young ladies who will become women one day.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. So in the, how has your daughter dealt with this situation and how have you helped her through it?
Well, she's very, emotionally reserved, maybe. Mm-hmm. Not abnormally. I think I'm abnormally emotionally expressive, maybe. so we're really different in how we feel things truly, and then also in how we express them. So, and you know, for her, like my mom was old. She was only 64, but from my daughter's perspective, like, well, yeah, it's normal that old people die. And she knows that the car accident was not a normal way of dying for sure. And that my mom could have had many more years or decades left. But she's been really, really good. You know, we spent the first day crying and holding each other and went up to Tahoe where my sister lives and gathered with the whole family and all just cried together for days and weeks. But she's been fine. She has a really solid sense of self. She's really a grounded little person. I found her journal last week and I saw that she had written about it, which I didn't know. And she just wrote something like, we're on our way to my Grammy's funeral. It is so sad for everyone who knew her, but she wrote so many O's in so that it filled up the whole page.
Cute. Wow.
Yeah, it was cute. So she cried that first day and she cried a couple times since then. And she spoke at the memorial service. She stood in front of my sister and I and spoke before we did. And that was really sweet. In front of 350 people. Mm-hmm. So she's just got this very strong sense of herself that I think sees her through a lot in her little life. And she's definitely been more like of a support person to me than I've had to be to her through this.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And then I've seen on your Instagram the cutest picture of her, and you mentioned how excited she is to be a big sister, and she's like, I'll help with the vacuuming. I'll help. That is so cute. And it's like, just so sweet.
It was the sweetest thing that she's ever said. And actually what I didn't put in that caption was that the next morning she said to me, I'll do everything Grammy would have done.
Oh my God.
Wow. She's 9 years old, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I think that's like a tear jerker.
Yeah. Which doesn't mean that she doesn't complain every time I ask her to like clean or do something, because she does. But sometimes her better self comes out.
I mean, that's to be expected.
True.
Yes.
To be nine.
Yes. Unless that's like your gift in life is cleaning, you know.
Not mine, definitely.
Yeah. Wow. So,
Amber, have you had any unexpected realizations or transformations that have come about as a result of these processes?
That's a good question. I feel clearer on my path, on a path that I was kind of already walking before this happened, which is I was already working with death and I was already working with ancestry. And so both of these things just kind of clarified for me that I wanted to focus more on those, especially in terms of writing. Now that I have this big personal experience that I can kind of use as a foundation for exploring these topics more and writing about them and sharing with them. And it also has just kind of deepened this realization that I first had on psilocybin mushrooms when I was 16, that everything is okay and everything's going to be okay, even when it's awful and terrible. There's this ground of being that is safe in life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I went through the worst thing I can imagine, aside from my own child dying. I went through the worst thing I can imagine, and I'm okay. And we're all okay. We're all still here, and we're all still loving each other, and we're okay.
Wow. Yeah. And so you're saying that these experiences have helped you kind of release maybe what is, you know, stuff that isn't as big of a deal as you thought it was, and you can focus more directly on what matters and what your life path is. And are you talking about writing more just in a blog, or I mean, are there?
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate is to write a book. Yeah. That's always been like my biggest dream in life. Seriously, to have two daughters and to write a book.
Oh my God, and you're gonna get it.
Since I was little. Yeah. So I mean, I have started to kind of write down some chapter ideas and stuff for a book. But right now it's mostly channeled into the blog and Instagram. You know, Instagram is writing, and I really use it as a writing platform more than a photo sharing platform. So just putting things into words that can maybe help someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just want to take a second here and plug your website, because your writing is phenomenal. I have spent hours on your website, so I'm doing totally fangirl here, but
Thank you.
Can you tell us what your website is, and we'll say it again at the end of the episode, but just to get it in there.
Yeah, sure. It's aquariandawn.com.
Cool. And we'll talk about that more
thank
later.
Thank you. Thank you so much for those kind words. That's my favorite compliment to get by far, is that people like my writing. It's my favorite thing to do and really feels meaningful and special for me, and like the one thing I can do really well in the world.
I know, when you find that one thing, it's like, okay, I gotta run with this.
Yes,
definitely.
So Amber, for folks who don't have background, you mentioned earlier that dealing with death is an extension of your earlier studies. You've studied conscious death and home funerals, and you volunteered in hospice. As someone who's been interested and thought a lot about what death is since a young age, what made you interested in these topics to begin with?
Being raised in a Christian church, when we were little kids, we went to church, and I remember learning about eternal life and being really little, like really little, and laying in bed at night and just like tripping, trying to figure out what that meant and if it was impossible. And it was like this like existential crisis for my little 5-year-old self, you know, and just and it, so I had the, it was terrifying to me to think of eternal life, and it still kind of is. One of my daughter's friends was saying this to me the other day. She's like, but you're supposed to die. I don't want to live forever. And I was like, yeah, that's how I feel too. So it kind of made me feel like death was a safe space, I guess. And want to look at death, where I feel like many people, including my mom, like did not want to look at death and really want to look away from it. I'm like, no, let's see what's there as far as we can from this side of things.
How did you look at it?
Well, I don't know.
Well, I mean,
as something that seems interesting. I'm interested in what happens there. I'm interested in that portal, and I'm interested in what's on the other side. And I feel like it's safe. There's that Ram Dass quote, death is as safe as life gets. And I really like that. Death is absolutely safe. That's his quote. Death is absolutely, dying is absolutely safe. I feel that, and I want others to feel that, because of course, you know, the underlying terror of death really drives us in so many unconscious ways. And I certainly feel it. I'm not like, yay, death. But, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh God, no, like I don't want that to ever happen to me or anyone I know. Yeah, but I don't know what it is, and no one knows what it is. And you know, it's been really interesting since my mom died, how I've learned so much about grieving in America, grieving in our culture, and how people approach it. And one thing that I've had a really hard time with is when people try to tell me what they think death is and what they think the afterlife is. And this is what's happening for your mom right now. And I'm like, don't do that to people unless you know they share your belief that it's actually not comforting and not helpful in most situations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's kind of another mini crusade of mine now, just to kind of educate people around how to deal with grieving people, what not to say, because I think mostly in American culture, we say the wrong thing.
We don't have a lot of study or community around it.
No, we don't.
No.
Could use
we
more.
Don't. Yeah, but it really, there's really like a renaissance in death studies and people writing about it and talking about it online. It's very much coming to be something that's okay to talk about.
So I know there's, I think, what's her name? Nancy Kubler-Ross and her...
The Five Stages of Grieving?
No, it's Kubler-Ross.
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. Okay, yeah. Thank you. I don't know why it was Nancy in my head. And her Stages of Grieving, did you resonate with that? Did you go through those stages or...
It's funny. I heard someone on NPR reference those stages today. And
Pop so quiz, what are they?
I could come up with some of them. But she did not ever write that they happen in the order that people now say they happened in. It wasn't like a codified thing for her where first it's anger and then it's denial or whatever. It was like, these are common things that people go through after someone close to them dies. And by the end of her life, she already saw that people were misunderstanding her stages of grief, and she was starting to speak out against it. And there are still people today like me trying to tell people, no, it's not necessarily in that order, and not everyone goes through every stage. She was simply saying most people go through some, if not all, of these stages.
Yeah, and interesting that it's not a linear thing, and it's not like a set in stone process. It's like everyone's different, and it's not linear. I mean, I've just read from your postings that you'll be experiencing an amazing joy and then like tears. And it's something that just cycles through. How do you sit with that in your daily life? How do you live with the experience of grief still being a part of your life like that?
Yeah. I think the post that you're talking about is, I was kind of writing about how I'm kind of sick of like the tears and the grief just hitting me out of nowhere, because sometimes it's really frequent. Sometimes it's a few times a day or every day during a certain week, and I'll have a whole week where I don't cry at all. And it gets kind of overwhelming when it's this onslaught of just sadness and tears, but the only way out is through. So when I am struck with that sadness, I just cry until it's gone. Or you know what? Sometimes actually for the first time in my life, I've always had the philosophy like just cry until it's done. But sometimes I just have to make myself stop to move on with my life, to do what needs to be done, to make lunch for my daughter because we have to be out the door in 10 minutes. You know, mm-hmm. I just have to be like, okay, done. Now I'm done crying. I'm getting up off the bed, opening
the
refrigerator.
Running the lunch program.
Yeah.
Yeah. Implement lunch protocol.
Yeah.
So in dealing with your grief, I know you're an herbalist, and I'm wondering, have there been any herbs or other types of tools that have been helpful in being with your grief?
Yeah, it took really a few months, like I was saying earlier with the ritual aspect, how it took me a few months to be able to do anything like that too, just to have enough like mental and emotional space to start focusing on taking care of myself again. So I started doing nettle infusions and just trying to really nourish myself on a deeper level, especially because I was not getting enough nutrients during the first few months of the grieving process. And I've recently started doing a hawthorn elixir, just to help my heart, just to help my heart. Mm-hmm. And scent has been big, just different essential oils. Or every time I'm outside and I see a plant that I know has a smell to it, you know, I'll pick a little bit or just squeeze a little bit and smell my fingertips. And herbal body oiling is something that I do a few times a week, like a full body oil. And that I did every single day in the first couple of weeks after my mom died, just to help my body process the grief and help me try to get as much sleep as I could at night.
Oh, wow. Can you tell us more about herbal body oiling?
And what's in your blend?
Well, I use quite a few different ones. So every year I make St. John's wort, mugwort, yarrow. This year I did a cannabis and lemon verbena and pine needle as well.
Oh, wow.
And so I sell them in different combinations on my website, but I also keep them like in bulk on my countertop and just dip into whichever one I need every day. And so these are whole plants infused into olive oil, not just essential oils dropped into oil. It really makes a difference to have the whole plant in there. I started making them about 10 years ago, I guess, and realized really quickly that oiling my body relaxed me much quicker than taking any sort of herb internally ever did.
Wow.
Like drink all the lavender tea you want, but you're not going to be as chill afterward as if you just oil your body. There's something about the way the fat in the oil interacts with the nervous system that just chills the nerves right out. And of course relaxes the muscles too. And the effect of both of those spreads through the whole body. So at this point, I oil all the time, a few times a week, sometimes every day. And I'm definitely a highly sensitive person, an HSP, which is a real thing. It's kind of like today when people
know.
I know you girls know. I know you do know. When people say they're empaths, I think a lot of those people are HSPs too. And you can find a quiz online, like if you just Google highly sensitive person. And it doesn't mean you cry all the time, although I happen to be one of those who does. it means that your nervous system is extra sensitive to the stimuli that comes at it in everyday life. Mm. So I know at the end of just a normal day, like today is a day where I'm in town all day, I'm running errands, I'm seeing people, I'm doing things, nothing like traumatic or devastating has happened. But when I get home tonight, I'm going to be like, I need to unwind. And I will definitely be oiling my body tonight. So herbal body oiling, especially the whole body, is really helpful for empaths and HSPs.
Very cool.
And you know, I kind of suspect that many more people are HSPs than they think, but people are just blocked to accepting that because we're so busy living in these fast-paced lives and trying to keep up with society's expectations. I feel like it's kind of, I feel like the HSP isn't the
minority, it's the majority.
Yeah. Right, and it's just that people don't recognize that they're not living aligned with what humans are.
Right, or yeah, that you don't have to feel so like crappy all the time.
Yeah, right. There's an alternative.
Right, and you know, I hate it when I hear like someone's getting old and their doctor just tells them, you know, they're having a problem. Their doctor's just like, oh, that's what happens when you get old. It's like, whoo, that's, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
listen, yeah, that's just a personal rant there.
Yeah, that normal is feeling bad or stressed or overwhelmed.
Right, and deteriorating mentally, emotionally, physically.
Right. And then you talk about body oiling as calms your nervous system. And so the herbs, so the combination of the herbs having an effect on your body, like they get in through your pores and they affect your body. And then the combination of the touch probably is.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, and stimulating your lymphatic system if you're moving towards your heart.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, as far as the touch is concerned, I think the biggest benefit there is that it keeps the lymph moving, and you know, the lymph doesn't move on its own. We need to do it ourselves. And especially for women, doing like the armpit and breast and inner thigh lymph massage is so important.
Mm. I think you've definitely inspired me now. I'm like, I got to do this.
For anyone listening who wants to look up the methods to do that, Amber, do you have a recommendation for a resource they can go to?
I'm sure you could find it anywhere online. I mean, I have an ebook listed on my website that's all about, it's called Herbal Body Oiling, Ancient Sacrament, Modern Necessity. And I talk about how to make herbal body oils and how to do them and just like FAQs and which herbs are good for what. And there's quotes from 8 other herbalists in there. I think it's like 25 pages long, illustrated. It's really very comprehensive if you're really interested in herbal body oiling. But at the very least, you know, I always say just like throw your hair up, get on a towel and oil yourself from top to bottom. And it doesn't take that much oil either. You can, a little goes a really long way. And then you can take a shower afterwards if you feel like you don't like being oily. I know a lot of people who actually oil after the shower before they put their clothes on. We all have different skin and different absorption rates. So it depends on what you like, or you could put some in the bath. And if you don't have an herbal body oil, seriously, you can just use olive oil, sesame oil, butter, any plain fat.
Girl, I like
any
you.
Any plain fat will chill you out. Yeah.
That's awesome. We're Danish, so
yeah.
Butter it is.
Awesome.
Yeah, fat is good for you taken internally, and it's good for you taken externally.
That's
too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Mm. I want to go back to talking a little bit more about death and birth, because I really loved reading about your first birth and about how you chose to have an unassisted birth. And you said the strongest flash of intuition you had ever had at this point in your life, which is, I guess, 10 years ago now, mm-hmm. was when you were 5 months pregnant with your first child and you knew you didn't need anyone else but you at the birthing. And you actually said you were on the table with your midwife and you're like, I don't need this. And you chose an unassisted birth. Are you going with the same route with this new baby?
No, I'm having that same midwife and her partner be at the birth this time.
What made that? Why'd you make that choice now?
Because I feel like my first birth might have been a little shorter or easier if they had been there. And I'm not sure if that's true or not. At our last meeting with them last month, they asked me my whole birth story with my first daughter, and I told them everything. And the points that I kind of thought were maybe where like I had failed or I could have done something differently, like towards the end, I was really slipping in and out of consciousness between contractions. Wow. And I was like, oh, that was a bad sign. You know, they were like, oh, that's great. Like, we love when that happens because it means that you're really in like that dream state and you're letting your body take over. And that's so important in labor. And I was like, oh, so that wasn't a failure. Like, that was totally normal. And, you know, that was a very positive experience, my daughter's unassisted birth. But then also postpartum was pretty hard. Like, in the hours following, there's like blood everywhere.
Oh, wow.
You know, we didn't really know what to do. We could have used some more support. So I just really wanted to feel like a loving circle of women supporting me this time.
And it's totally different now. You've said that you were very alone in that with after your first child was born. Mm-hmm. But now you have a huge community of people who may or may not know you, but who support you. And then, you know, more close friends. I mean,
yes.
How has that changed your anticipation of giving birth to this child? versus your first one?
Yeah, I mean, I was really excited about my first one. I'd always wanted to be a mom, always wanted a daughter, like I said, and I was sure she was a girl, even though we never did the ultrasound. So I was pretty excited, but I also just had no idea what I was getting into. And we were young. I was 25, and her dad was 21 when she was born. And we had no money. We had nothing. Like, looking back, you know, I'm like, only like idealistic young people like us would be like, yeah, let's do this. And so I didn't really know what I was getting into. And yeah, where I lived at the time, I didn't really have any friends, let alone mom friends. My partner had to go back to work the day after she was born, and my mom had to go back to work the day after she was born also. So I was just alone all the time. And now I live in Grass Valley, Nevada City, in Northern California, and have a wonderful network of women and friends in my life. And I'm just like in joy all the time, anticipating this baby. And I know that my experience is just going to be easier, and I'm going to be more supported, so much more supported this time. And I know what I'm doing this time. I know what I'm getting into. I can anticipate with some measure of reality what's going to happen this time. And I can't wait.
Cool. And then what advice would you give to any mothers out there who are feeling really lonely?
Oh gosh. Well, I don't know. For me, I've always been pretty shy, but after I had my daughter, if I'd see someone like in the grocery store who had a baby around the same age and looked at all nice, I would just be like, hi. Here's my baby. What are you doing tomorrow? I really, really put myself out there and was kind of like abnormally, not aggressive, but, you know, assertive, just really maybe? Like, I would like to be your friend. Yeah, assertive. Mm-hmm. Let's hang out. Let's see how this goes. Let's see if our kids get along and maybe we can have some connection here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't have the internet when she was born. This was like, I guess it wasn't pre-Facebook, but I didn't have Facebook then. I had MySpace.
Oh, yeah.
but I didn't have the internet. This was pre-smartphone. So now I think social media just helps so much. I see women, young mothers or new mothers all the time commenting on how much Instagram or Facebook has really helped them not feel quite as lonely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the magical thing about the internet and the power that it has to connect. It's, oh gosh, I'm going to admit right here on the air, I met my husband on the internet. I love the internet.
Oh, yeah.
It's all in how you use the internet.
It's a powerful tool.
I feel the same way. I've loved it from day one, from the mid-90s when we first got it in my house. I was just saying to a friend this morning, like, I love Instagram, you know, like, yeah. Unabashedly it has enhanced my life in so many ways.
Yeah. And you know, I hear people who get really down on social media because people only share the beautiful things or the, you know, the shiny pretty things, but you've really been out there with what you've shared. You obviously like doing that because you continue to doing it, but how did you make that choice? I mean, is it just a natural part of you, or was it something that you were like, I'm going to share more of the nitty-gritty?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've journaled since I was 12 or something. And I remember I even read this in one of my old like high school journals. I was like, maybe someday when I die, someone will find my journals and read them and not feel so alone. Mm-hmm. You know, so I always had this like impetus to share the truth about my life through writing. And I started blogging in 2008, I think. At the time, my first blog was based around, it was called Nourished Mother. And it was about like mothering and herbalism and nutrition and breastfeeding and birth and stuff like that. And I've had a few different blogs over the years, but at some point I realized that the blogs I felt the best about and the blogs that like resonated the most with my readers were the ones where I was really personal and really honest. And then when Brené Brown's work started coming out and getting really popular on the internet a few years ago, you know, she did like two of the most viewed TED Talks of all time, and she writes about vulnerability. And I've read all her books and watched all her TED Talks and just was immediately resonant with her message of, if we're not totally honest about our lives, what's the point?
Mm, powerful.
Yeah.
How do you find ways to be honest about your life?
I don't know. It's not hard for me. That's another thing. You know, it is hard for some people. I think I'm kind of a natural oversharer anyway.
Interesting.
So Amber, you talk about this on your blog, but we think it's really interesting and we want our listeners to be introduced to these ideas. You say that the simplest, realest, most powerful, and most personally meaningful way to find a deeper spirituality and connect with the wisdom of the old ways is to find our ancestors. How have you found your ancestors, and what have you learned from connecting with them?
Well, I was lucky enough to know all four of my grandparents and four of my great-grandparents.
Wow.
Yeah. As was my daughter. She had she was born into the exact same ancestral constellation of still living people in her family. And I have one grandparent still living. My mom's mom, like I said, is 94 now. And my dad especially was really close with his family. And I mean, we saw both sides of my family, but my dad's family was bigger, I guess, and more cohesive and still lived, you know, close to each other and less divorced. And so we kind of just spent more time with them. And I really liked the stories that he would tell and that they would tell. And this felt very deeply connected to that. And gosh, I guess 6 years ago, I think maybe having a child got me more interested in it as well. So when she was three, I just had this overwhelming urge to find out as much as I could about my family before the elders died. And so I got in a car and I drove down to Bakersfield, California, where my dad's people are. And I brought a video camera and I brought my daughters, like, summer break, and interviewed as many of them as I could and got names and dates and stories and as much information as I could. And then started plugging those into ancestry.com. And just got fascinated with it. I always tell people, like, I dare you to start looking into your ancestry and not become obsessed. It's just, it's so fascinating and so interesting. And it's you, you know, it's who you are. Meryl Streep, I saw her on one of those ancestry shows years ago. And I remember her saying, "We are nothing but them." And that's always stuck with me because it's true. We just, you know, you would be exactly who you are if it weren't for literally billions of people who came before you, who are in your direct bloodline and made you who you are. And today, you know, being in sort of this spiritual world that I'm in online and in my little community and that a lot of us are in, I just see so many people yearning for these old ways and yearning to have a deeper connection to the earth and to some sort of spirituality. And so we often go for someone else's culture because that's what's in front of us, and kind of appropriate or co-opt their beliefs, which that can be done respectfully and that's okay. But I think we forget to just look to our own people and look to our own past and see what's there. And maybe you're not going to find like some awesome ritual or medicine woman or someone in your line, but you're going to find stories that resonate with you because they come from you. They come from your blood and your bones and your people. And so I have just found that that's so powerful and so much more powerful for me and for many others I know than looking elsewhere for a source of spiritual sustenance and deeper meaning.
Amen. Do you have any advice for folks who might want to do that digging in their own families as to how to deal with all those fears that come up, like my people won't want to talk to me, or how do I get the camera out? Is it just as simple as, you know, suck it up and press record?
I'd say so. I mean, yeah, my boyfriend feels like that. He has one living grandparent, and I guess she just will not talk about it. You know, he's tried, and so I don't really know what to do at that point, except that I have found that as people get older, they get much more interested and willing to talk about their past and their families. You know, it's like the closer you get to death, kind of the closer your mind goes back to your own birth. Like people who are in late dementia sometimes just, they won't remember the people that they knew in their 40s and 50s, but they'll remember their brothers and sisters and childhood friends. And so I think it's worth it to try. It's absolutely worth it to try. And I think the most important thing, the most important first step is to call the oldest people in your family and get names, dates, and places from them. Because at the very least, you can plug those into Ancestry.com and Ancestry will start to fill in your family tree for you. It's just, I wish that they would pay me for always talking about how good they are. I sound like the commercials on those TV shows, but really, you know, it's, if you've never used it before, it's so cool because you can put in like your great grandparents' name and date of birth and date of death and where they were from. And it'll be like, oh, and here's their parents and here's their parents' parents and here's their parents' parents' parents. And boom, your family tree starts filling in. And it's just so interesting.
Yeah, just to think that with just a few pieces of information, you can see all the people that you emerged from. That's powerful.
It's powerful. It's amazing. Yeah, and you think about genealogy enthusiasts of the past who had to drive out of state or even maybe to their local library, but look through like musty books and try to piece things together. And now
I can
it's
see
so
the dust
easy.
On the turning pages and the magnifying glasses as you say this.
Yes, I mean, which sounds awesome, but you know, this is just so much easier and quicker.
Cups of tea in libraries, ancestry.com, people.
Oil yourself yeah. up and go look up your ancestry. Yeah.
I've spent many a night doing that.
On my sounds like what I might be doing tonight.
Yeah, so you guys said that you have Danish ancestry.
Oh, yeah, do, our grandmother's
is that
totally Danish.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So it's on one side of the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, just through our mother.
And was she... Oh, see, that's sweet. So it's your mother's mother. It's mm-hmm. your matrimonial mm-hmm.
She's
life.
Still alive. She'll be 93 in a couple months.
So mm-hmm. we got to go ask her some questions.
She's, yeah, she's you do. She's reluctant to talk, though, but we'll keep she asking is. Her. I secretly film them. And they'll never know because they don't listen to these podcasts. Yeah. But those films are some of the most cherished things that I have. And yeah. my sisters.
It's true. Just walking around the garden, seeing the way they walk and the clothes they wear.
Oh,
and
God.
The way they hold the watering can.
Do you know why she's hesitant?
I think it's modesty.
I think so, too. Although I have noticed what you said. She's opening up more.
Yes.
When I ask her stories, she's starting to tell more and volunteer more and get out photo books and show us things.
You know, they'll talk to us if we're not recording. And it's a little bit harder for them to think about. I mean, there's, you know, they don't own a computer. They don't own anything digital.
So they come from a time when information yeah. wasn't so commodified.
I think it makes them feel a little weird.
Yeah.
But. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you and other people who might have that same problem just explain, this is important to me. I want to know this. And like maybe I'll have children someday and they'll want to know where they come from. I think when people know that they're passing something on, mm-hmm. they're passing on their legacy, they might be more willing to talk as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so. I'm going to go visit soon. I'll try that.
I'll try too. Let's all just attack from all sides.
Gently. So in your approach to creating a family, do you have a perspective about creating sacred partnership?
Oh, that's such a big question.
I know. I know.
I've certainly had a lot of theories over the years. Had a really challenging relationship with my daughter's father, and it's been 5 years now since we broke up. And like I said, I've been with Owen now for almost 3 years, and he's wonderful. And I think what has worked for us is that we took it really slowly, really, really slowly, and just eased into it. But no, I don't. I feel like it would be like silly of me to try to say that I have an answer for that.
Fair enough.
Space. We give each other space. We really let one another be who they are. And we don't spend all of our free time together. And we're really encouraging about each other's pursuits in life. And that works for us. We're we don't live together. I'm 4 months pregnant. We still don't live together, but we are looking to buy a house. We're in the searching process right now, and we want separate bedrooms when we find one. That's imperative that we can continue to have our own space and kind of keep that mystery there and that distance that keeps it exciting.
Hmm. You know, I can totally relate to that, because when I finally moved in with my husband, which was before we got married, but it was under the condition that I have my own room too. It was like, and then he was totally into that. He's like, yeah. And since then, he's just done such an amazing job. You know, since we're open about like the same things of giving each other space, he's done such an amazing job of helping to create the home that we want. And it's a really fun journey. Yeah. So I'm excited for you as you move forward in your new journey.
What I have learned through being friends almost exclusively with other moms and with wives for 10 years now is that most of the women I know are unhappy in some way with the traditional assumptions and roles. And just so many people I know are looking for alternatives within their marriages or ending their marriages to figure something else out. It's really hard being a nuclear family. It's really hard raising kids on your own, just the two of you, and trying to make money and get the dishes done and lunches packed. And it's just overwhelming for people. Mm. And so we kind of, you know, I'm lucky that I have that perspective now. And we're, you know, endeavoring to set about from the beginning by doing things just a little differently, starting out with space instead of like demanding it later on.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about death, birth, and family, and let's extend our conversation now into all of our relations, including our plant, animal, and fungi and other relations. As an herbalist, you have a deep connection with the plant world, and you've spoken about your consciousness expanding experiences with psychedelics. Can you tell us, from your perspective, how can people interact with psychedelics in a sacred and safe way with the intention of expanding their own consciousness?
Yes, I'd say, first of all, understand that they are not party substances. It's not something that you'd use interchangeably with alcohol or other, quote, drugs. And I do not like using the word drugs when I talk about psychedelics. The word psychedelic is really beautiful, broken down into its Greek roots. Psyche means soul or mind. And delos means manifesting. So mind manifesting or soul manifesting is what psychedelics are. They're medicine. And using them with intention and in a very safe space is paramount. It makes me so sad that people think that they're party drugs and then have these horrible experiences on them, where if you really control for set and setting, where you are, who's there, how safe you feel, and what your own internal mindset and emotional state is at the time, you can, for the most part, have the experience that you want on psychedelics. And I highly recommend James Fadiman's book, The Psychedelic Explorer's Guide, How to Have Safe, Therapeutic, and Sacred Journeys, something like that. It lays out exactly how to use these medicines to expand your own consciousness and your own sense of place in the universe.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, he's a wonderful man. He's one of the original psychedelic researchers from the 60s who just kind of went underground when psychedelics were scheduled in 1970, I think, when they became Schedule I. Drugs that have, quote, no therapeutic use and are highly addictive. neither of those things are true of psychedelics. You cannot physically get addicted to them. And then I met him at the Conscious Dying Summit a couple years ago, and it was really a big deal for me to get to meet one of my heroes from the psychedelic movement. And we became friends, and he has kind of exploded since then. He's been on Tim Ferriss's podcast, which is apparently the most popular podcast.
Wow.
On iTunes and a bunch of other places. And so it's really, there's very much a resurgence in psychedelic research right now. The second psychedelic science conference is happening in Oakland next year in spring of 2017. I went to the first one, but I won't be at this one. But it's, like I said earlier, yeah, having this psilocybin mushroom experience when I was 16 and had no idea that it was going to be what it was. I was very much like, yeah, let's just do these shrooms, guys. You know, it's just me and two close girlfriends. So I luckily was in a very safe space. Mm-hmm. And it just totally blew my mind and my heart open and really, I think, was like the foundational life experience that set me on the path, whatever that means, that has led me to where I am now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for those blessings, fungi world.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And thanks for, again, providing an alternative to the idea that psychedelics are a party drug, and there are ways to interact with them with firm intention and sacred, safe methods.
Respect. Mm-hmm. Respect yes. for self, respect for the power. Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you, Amber.
Thank you so much.
Tell us more. Where can people find you online, and what kind of offerings might you have on there?
Yeah, well, thank you, Natalie and Lizzie. It's been really, really sweet to finally connect with you two. So my website is aquariandawn.com. And yeah, I've got the blog there. I have my mythic medicinals, body oils, some upcoming events, classes, and workshops that are always being updated. And consultation services. I do an herbal self-care consultation over the phone with women who just need a little bit of encouragement in that direction, and ancestry consultations as well. And so, yeah, I'm there, aquariandawn.com, and aquariandawn on Instagram with that underscore in between those two words.
Great. We'll have all those links in the show notes. Well, excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amber.
It's been a great pleasure. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening. You can show your gratitude and help others find these conversations by subscribing and leaving a review on iTunes or whatever app you're listening through.
Leaving a review will help us grow this network of earth lovers and intuitive-minded folks. You can also help us share these conversations by liking our Dream Freedom Beauty page and sharing your favorite episode on Facebook. For exclusive content and rewards, support us on Patreon.
Thank you so much, and until next time, many blessings.